to House of Comments. Parliament is back, and so are we. I'm Charlotte Henry, sitting here in my Adidas Samba trainers. She's Emma Bunnell. Hello, Emma.
Hello.
All good?
I don't have any trainers.
You're not wearing your Adidas Sambas because Rishi Sunak has put you off, has he? You're such a fashionista, you can't wear the same as the Prime Minister.
I have walking shoes rather than trainers.
You do. You have proper hardcore hiking trainers. I've now started spotting people wearing the same trainers as Rishi Sunak on the tube. That's the level I've got to. We'll have to give away the gossip because we've got so blooming much to get through this week.
Oh my God.
We thought we planned a show, then Rishi Sunak turned up for a speech the morning we record on Friday morning. We will get to that. First, we have to do the sort of law and order section of House of Commons. We're going to start north of the border in Scotland. There's not much we can say because it's an ongoing police investigation. But Peter Murrell, who is the former chief executive of the SNP and also the husband of Nicola Sturgeon, the former first minister, has been rearrested by detectives. He was taken to Falkirk Police Station. It's more than a year since his first arrest and has subsequently been charged. This is all part of the ongoing investigations into the SNP, into finances and all that kind of messy stuff. As we say, the investigation is ongoing. I'll give you the Police Scotland spokesperson's statement, which is: a 59-year-old man has today, Thursday the 18th of April 2024, been charged in connection with the embezzlement of funds from the Scottish National Party. All we can say really is we've got to keep an eye on this, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just part of the ongoing SNP collapse, I think, which is more political than it is in terms of the legal.
That, of course, is the bit we'll be watching out for. And we've just got to see how it plays out in the few months heading into an assumed general election, I guess. And also, obviously, we don't know how any of these police developments are going to happen, but that will be the thing to watch. I'll give you the SNP spokesperson comment as well. While this development will come as a shock, the police investigation remains ongoing and it would therefore be inappropriate to make any comment. We should also note that Peter Murrell has resigned his SNP membership. Operation Branch Form, which is this probe that's going on, is basically looks into the spending of more than £600,000 in donations for independence campaigning. There we go on that. Here in the UK, although not a million miles away from Scotland because it's up in Fylde, is Tory MP Mark Menzies. He has lost the party whip. He's no longer a trade envoy to Colombia. You can do your own jokes. because the Times has revealed there seems to have been money. Well, the allegation, let me say it that way, we don't know what's actually happened, is that party money has gone to personal use. That is the allegation. It looks to be about £6,500 is, again, that's the money going, the discussion that's happening. Beg your pardon?
That's only the second half of the story, because the party money going for personal use was him paying back someone who he rang. Now, there was one person who was rung at 3:15 a.m. Yeah, and
that's the story I'm referring to.
But there's also, once they got the money, the second thing that went wrong was, instead of him paying it back, because it was obviously a personal issue, it was paid back out of local party funds that were supposed to go on leaflets.
Indeed, that's the allegation. He strongly disputes the claims, and strongly is a quote, but we're going to have to, again, keep an eye on that. Rishi Sunak was asked about it this morning. Obviously, didn't say very much because there is an ongoing investigation.
That's the other part, isn't it? The Tories have known about this
right.
since January.
Yes, the Times has revealed that.
Only the Times coming out with it that meant that there was any sort of public action taken.
Yes, you're correct. That is the next bit of it. And that, to me, is what's going to cause the bigger political issue. Look, Mark Menzies will have to deal with the legal issues himself.
Mark Menzies seems like a very troubled human being.
Okay.
And if you're behaving like that whilst also being a public figure.
Allegedly.
Allegedly behaving like that. then I think that there's more going on inside you than you just being a dick. So I think that, yeah, you're right. That's why I think the Tory investigation is the bigger problem.
Yes, I think you're right, because let's be blunt here. We're not talking about enormous sums of money. I mean, we'd all like an extra $6,500, but it's not, in the grand scheme of things, enormous money. You may well be right that there are personal issues going on that have led to this alleged situation. But if the... this brings me actually back to a whole issue about the whip system, right? Because part of being a party whip, and you'll know this in some ways better than I do, is about protecting your colleagues as well, right?
Absolutely. It can kind of comes from both ends. So you're supposed to be able to protect them. If you see they're starting to go down a bad way, you pull them in, you have a word.
Right.
Then on the other hand, you are there to enforce discipline. And this is possibly why it doesn't work terribly well, because it's very hard to be both those people.
Well, it's always been contradictory, right? Because there's also the issue of, say, if you go to a whip saying, I'm having, say, as an example, again, this is not applying to the Mark Menzies particularly, but this is the type of thing that does happen. You go to a whip saying, look, I'm having a bit of a mental health crisis, or I've screwed up X, Y, Z. They obviously should provide help and support and welfare, but also they've got something in their little black book.
Yes. And it's why it's insane that there isn't a proper HR system. Oh,
you and I could do a whole podcast on that. But just on the Mark Menzies thing, again, I'll reiterate, he strongly denies the claims. But I think for Rishi Sunak and the Conservative Party, knowing about whatever these allegations were for near the best part of 4 months, it looks like 3-4 months, will be the political problem for them. For Mark Menzies, obviously, there is going to be a legal process he now has to go through. Sir Keir Starmer has called for that. The Labour Party want to look into that. So I'll give you Sir Keir Starmer's...
I believe Annalise Johns has now written to Lancashire Police.
Well, she's certainly written to Richard Holden, who's her counterpart in the Conservative Party. They both chair their parties. So that has certainly happened. Here's Sir Keir's comment. There are obviously a lot of unanswered questions in relation to these allegations, not least why it seems the Conservative Party took so long to act and whether they've reported this to the police, who it seems to me should be involved in this. Uh-oh, lawyer Sir Keir Starmer deployed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's. I guess there's a little element of tit for tat because of the reporting of Angela Rayner to the police.
Yes, we were off air while all of that has gone on, and I've still not entirely sure I've processed that story. But anyway, continue.
So I think that in terms of, I mean, basically, this story has knocked the Angela Rayner story into a cocked hat.
Yeah. Oh, indeed. So we should just be clear. We've mentioned this sort of $6,500 allegation. There is an allegation that in total there are payments of £14,000 that go back 4 years from campaign funds. These were used to pay allegedly personal medical bills. And as you say, the Conservatives are said to be made aware of these allegations in January because Mr. Menzies' former campaign manager told Simon Hart, who was the Conservative chief whip. The BBC haven't actually got a comment from Mark Menzies, but as I say, he's previously said he told the Times, I strongly dispute the allegations put to me. I have fully complied with all the rules for declarations. And as there is an investigation ongoing, I will not be commenting further. As you say, Annalise Dodds is kind of taking the lead on this, dealing with Richard Holden, her counterpart. I guess we're going to have to see how this particular case plays out. But for me, and you and I were, as ever, exchanging messages in the build-up to this show, it seemed to, and you said, well, also, aren't we going to talk about some of the other cases? And that, to me, also seems the political problem. Mm. Because we keep having to have these conversations. Obviously, in the lead-up to this, we had the William Bragg scandal, which, again, another mess.
Yeah, and it just seems to be coming more and more and more often. It's like the end of the John Major government.
I was just going to say exactly. I was just going to say exactly the same thing. For those who have forgotten, William Wragg is the MP for Hazel Grove for the moment. He sits as an independent MP now because he also lost the Conservative whip. He obviously was sort of catfished, it seems. He's resigned the whip. He admitted he'd given out colleagues' numbers in this honey trap sort of sexting scam. I mean, again, you made a really good point about sort of the personal empathy we need to have for MPs, because that's sort of what that's really what you were getting at.
Yeah, absolutely. I have political enemies. I don't have personal enemies.
Right. Well, you do, but we're not going to talk about them on this
Oh,
show. And other MPs ended up being targeted by this honey trap because of William Wragg's actions. And there's a huge amount of personal pressure. And also, I think we shouldn't mention the kind of loneliness a lot of MPs suffer, being away from home for a large part of the week, working very late. It is difficult, but also, you're in public office. You have to behave accordingly.
Oh, absolutely. I am in no way saying that we should go, oh, it's okay because he's having a mental breakdown or whatever. I'm saying that I think he is having a mental breakdown of some form. If these,
So, who are we talking about here? Mark Menzies. Yeah.
But other people will make stupid mistakes that are nothing to do with their mental health. But there's a difference between saying I have empathy for the person going through these feelings, and we as the public should not expect better than this behaviour.
Because we should. Yeah, I also just on the sort of media point, because that's of course what I'm always interested in, should note that this is again from the Times, and the Times is doing some very good investigative journalism into the what's going on in Westminster. And once the Times gets its claws into something, I would be very nervous because they've obviously got some very good sourcing going on.
Well, and it's slipping out, slipping out, slipping
Right.
out. So
Which is
they
always the most dangerous.
absolutely. Well, it's how MPs' expenses happened, wasn't it, in the end?
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
And it was, back to basics. Oh, wait, everyone's shagging someone who's not their wife.
I mean, talk for yourself. But yeah, no, this is always a problem. I think it's also. Okay, this might sound stupid, but I'm going to put it to you anyway. Do you think it's a bigger problem for Rishi Sunak than it would be Boris Johnson?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think yes, because Rishi Sunak's first words were honesty, integrity,
Exactly.
and he just hasn't managed to get a grip. Boris Johnson, yeah, okay, he was brought down by the Pinchas thing,
But we didn't expect better.
but we didn't expect better of him. No, exactly. The Pincher thing happened because he was happy to just let these things happen. And then instead of going, I'm happy to let these things happen, and that's the line would just change so often. The reason all his colleagues resigned was not because they were outraged at his appalling behaviour. Didn't happen over Partygate. It
No.
happened because they kept being sent on the telly and saying something, and then 30 seconds later, everything had changed.
Yep, absolutely. Whereas, and also their personal sort of demeanor is different. Rishi Sunak does look very neat, very proper, very sensible, very honourable. Whereas sort of Boris Johnson has never tried to be.
Himself in that way,
Absolutely.
man of integrity.
Absolutely. And he may well be personally, but with his colleagues around him behaving this way, it's never going to reflect well on you once you're the leader and the Prime Minister.
Well, exactly, and integrity needs to be set for the top. You
Right.
zero tolerance. That's how you get integrity.
Yeah, I mean, I would say in Rishi Sunak's defence, he has acted pretty quickly on these things.
Well, except for this one we've just been talking about, where they've
Well,
done.
yeah.
And how, and that you say that, Charlotte, but how do we know that?
True. True. I mean, yeah, if this is if it is as we think gone on for 3 months without and only the Times revelations dealing with it, that is an interesting one. Again, look, if I was feeling generous, that may be because they were trying to protect a colleague going through a personal crisis, but you make a fair point. I can't argue with that. But it is going to be interesting to see how this reflects on him. Look, the truth is, and I, whatever I want to vote or whatever, it feels like end times, doesn't it? Every one of these stories.
It is absolutely, it's like the last days of Cylon. It's just crazy. It's up and there's twin tracks happening, and it's happening in Scotland as well. So there's the track of the personal stuff, the allegations again, an arrest, but we and
Yeah,
charged.
police investigation, which has to play,
Open,
all of that stuff.
investigations, but there's also the failure of politics. So we're watching this happen both in the UK government, where they just can't seem to get anything through. I mean, they got the smoking bill through, but that was a free vote. A free vote, I don't think of as the same as a proper government policy. Rwanda is dragging on and on and on.
Yep.
I don't know what they're for anymore. And then in Scotland, you've got a government that contains the Green Party dropping all their climate targets.
Yeah, bizarre. Yeah. Well, let's go to that smoking ban actually. Okay, there's a couple of things. First of all, I don't know what your take is. I'm not a smoker, but I don't approve of this policy. I am a liberal. I think, look, if at this stage you don't know smoking's bad for you, you haven't got a hope. And if as I say, I don't smoke, but I don't think the government needs to be nannying people out of it. I think this is a real mess of a policy
Yeah.
because at a certain point, you're going to have two tiers of adults, one who are free to do one thing and one who are not. And that who could have been born literally one day apart. And that is bizarre.
So I'm more illiberal than you are. I'm much more willing to have a nanny state. And I am a smoker, which is why I keep coughing, and apologies to listeners. But yeah, it's just it's a such a weird setup of a policy
Right.
that I'm like, okay, even if I absolutely agreed with all of the intended outcomes, like I mean I think far, far fewer people should smoke. It would be great if they did. But I just think the idea that my 15-year-old niece will never be allowed to buy a cigarette, but my 19-year-old nephew can smoke all he wants.
It's bizarre, right? But even more bizarre than that, someone who is a day older or whatever than your 15-year-old niece, not quite, I don't know the birth is, but you understand the point I'm making. You could literally have been born almost a minute or two apart.
Literally a minute of either side of midnight, and
Right.
you're a different type of adult, which just seems bizarre to me.
And it's, we should note, it's one of the strictest anti-smoking policies in the world, isn't it?
It is, and again, I'm not against anti-smoking policies. I'm just saying, have ones that work. And the other worry is that there's just going to be a massive black market.
Right. Absolutely. That always what's happened. That always what's happened when you ban stuff.
Well, that's it, isn't it? How have we gone? How have we done with drugs?
Well, I want to come on to that because, and you're going to tease me for this, but I don't care. I have a piece that will hopefully be going in the Spectator online today, or by the time you listen to it, will hopefully be live
I
about
really, really fancy someone.
Emma, about the sort of hypocrisy of the Lib Dems, because the Lib Dems have a policy of a regulated market for cannabis, is how they put it, but, you know, essentially decriminalising cannabis. And there are arguments in favour of that. There are, you know, there are medical grounds in which that in favour of using cannabis, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But Ed Davey and his health spokesman and deputy Daisy Cooper walked through the lobby for this smoking ban.
I mean, so you can smoke cannabis, but you can't smoke tobacco. And frankly, most people combine the two to run a joint.
Oh, yeah. So a person better than me can try and explain it.
Wow.
It did make me chuckle. Anyway, so that's kind of where we are. But the point is, this kind of policy leads to those kind of inconsistencies, right?
Well, that's it. And I think this is the heart of what we're both saying. Like, we can agree or disagree on how much we should be regulating tobacco or whatever. But the point is, bad policy is bad policy. Bad legislation is bad legislation. And if you want to do this, do it better.
Right. And don't create two tiers of adult.
Exactly.
I think this goes back to something you have often mentioned on this show, which is the sort of what is Rishi Sunakism? Because this is another fiddly little policy. Well, it's a big policy, but it's a fiddly thing on one very specific thing.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how it fits with everything else.
No, that's the thing. I don't see an overarching vision of Rishi Sunak.
And you've made this point a number of times, and every week that goes by sort of proves you right, which horrifies me, obviously, but...
I mean, yeah, it's terrible that I'm right.
Yeah, terrible.
But I am always right, so it's always terrible. But yeah, I just... There's no politics there, man.
Right. What is the politics? We're going to come on to his other intervention this morning, but I can't let this discussion of the smoking ban go without mentioning our esteemed former leader, Liz Truss, who's been doing the rounds this week.
I mean, self-reflection. a sense of shame, an understanding of what went wrong. These three things are not available for Liz Truss.
It doesn't appear so. I wonder if some of it, I was discussing this with a mate who put this to me, some of it might be self-preservation.
But self-preservation is go off and run a think tank, which she is doing. It's not write a book that says, I was right, everyone else was wrong, it's everyone else's fault.
Yeah. It does seem bizarre. I don't disagree with you. It seems there's no sort of sense of humility. There was an amazing clip, I'll try and share it in the show notes, of David Davis on the TV. Who, have you seen this clip?
No.
Who was, oh, I mean, it's one of the most brutal things you've ever seen. Basically taking the piss out of Liz Truss as a sort of late convert. He was totally unconvinced by her. And he's never rude. But it's so brutal. I'll include the link in the show notes because it's amazing.
Yeah,
he's just so, sort of describing her as having the zeal of a convert about low taxes and so on. And he's very cross. And I feel somewhat the same way, that basically someone like her has essentially ruined the case for low taxes.
Oh, I mean, the Adam Smith Institute, your boys took one hell of a beat.
All that stuff of free marketeer, low tax economies, she blew up in 49 days. I said it at the time, I'll say it again. And I think for someone like David Davis, that clip shows how angry those type of people are. And you could dislike or disagree with David Davis as much as you want, but he's a serious person who has genuine principles. You don't have to agree with the principles at all, but he does have principles and politics that he's worked for all his political career. And so for someone like Liz Truss to just blow that up for a lettuce gets stale is a must be infuriating. And I do feel the same way. I guess we better go to Rishi Sunak's speech. Goodness, we've been flying through all of this. What a lot to catch up on.
Oh, it just gets crazier and crazier.
So Rishi Sunak on Friday morning has decided to take on, quote, sick note culture if he wins the next general election. I have to say, I don't know if you noticed this watching the speech. He did have a government podium in front of him, but this was clearly a bit of a campaign speech.
Yes, well, integrity, professionalism, blah, blah, blah.
Well, look, when the Prime Minister, look, you have the advantage of office as Prime Minister. These things are always a bit blurry. I'm just saying I noticed it. So this is going to include a number of things. The idea is basically he wants people into work. He thinks there's things like lower level, I'm saying this in inverted commas, mental health issues. He wants people to get back into work, not be written off, all this kind of thing. GPs not to be the ones issuing fit for work notes, quote unquote, sick notes, you know, all that kind of thing. He said a significant number of working age people have become inactive due to long-term sickness, which has in large part been driven by mental health conditions. Now, I felt very conflicted watching this speech. I'll tell you why. Because I've been really pleased over the last X number of years how people have really pushed to get parity of esteem between mental health and physical health. Because I think that's a really important thing in a modern civilized society. But I also agree in some essence with him. So one of the arguments he made was actually going to work can help alleviate lower level mental health crises. And I do agree with that.
I agree with that. But here's the thing, that parity has come about not by raising up mental health.
Do you think I don't agree with it? You think people, we downgraded physical health?
Both systems are so broken.
Right.
They may have parity, but they don't have clarity.
Lots of people have. I have to say, in my most recent interactions with the NHS, and I'm lucky I don't have to have too many, have all been positive. I have, for example, a very good local GP, that kind of thing. But it's lots of people have not had the same experiences as I do, and I appreciate that. And I did think that would be one of the criticisms of this, saying it's all well and good to try and encourage people back into work and to be well and all that kind of thing, but you have to have the systems in place to make them well and make sure they've seen the GP, never mind a specialist, to get... And I know that will be one of the criticisms of this.
Yeah, look, there are lots of reasons, some of which I agree with, some of which I don't, that are given about this out-of-work crisis. But there was a very interesting report from the Fabians recently.
Well done. You got your plug in. Well done.
Plug in. It's called When I'm 64, and it's about pre-retirement.
Can I say, sorry, when that press release from you arrived in my inbox, I nearly phoned you for a round of applause to get that headline in. Well done.
Thank you. But yeah, what it was saying is that there is a lot of poverty in people aged 60 to 65 because they are not working. And some of that is to do with ill health. Some of it's to do with changing workforces, which means that if you lose your job at 55, it's really quite hard to get back into the workforce.
I assume these issues affect women more than men.
Different issues affect different groups. Right. But the other reason is that work is shit. And a lot of people are not enjoying their work anymore and are choosing to make themselves voluntarily poorer by taking pension early.
Yeah, and that's another point that I have to appreciate. You and I have the privilege of loving the work we do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that doesn't apply to a lot of people.
No, and a lot of workplaces are really, really hard. And, you know, we talk about minimum wage, but we don't often talk about minimum standards. And the ways that you're treated at work and the things that you're allowed to do and the rights that you have. And if you work in a white collar workplace, as we both do, we're more likely to have good standards.
Oh,
If I
you know, work for ourselves and do creative, interesting work and get to meet interesting people.
Exactly. Whereas, if you're in a manual job that you've been doing for 30 years, why, and your employer is still, cycling between Serco and GSK and et cetera, so you have very few employment rights. It just is not as nice.
And we also, I think, have to, and Rishi Sunak did do that in his speech, refer to the effect of the pandemic. Because, for example, some of the workers you're thinking of and describing didn't work during the pandemic and probably got into their late 50s, early 60s and went, sod this, why am I going back?
Absolutely, absolutely. But
And
also,
also, we should say, if Rishi Sunak's talking about mental health, the pandemic caused a huge, profound mental health crisis in people, which we have nowhere near dealt with.
no, absolutely. And add to that long COVID.
There are some people that are still suffering physical effects. I mean, that's true. There's one bit that did slightly concern me. So Rishi Sunak was talking about certain situations in which, after a year, you would have your essentially, your payments stopped completely, which I understand the point, which is to try and, if basically if you're not engaging with the world of work, trying to get into a job, whatever, it seemed that those payments would stop. And I want to pick my words very, very carefully here. I think his moral point about people in society, we all have to, society is based on all of us working. And therefore, society then protects you if something bad happens. That's the basic principle, right, of a safety net. But it does also worry me what might happen to some people if that safety net completely disappears. And I fear some of the terrible individual stories that might emerge from that. And I think you know what I'm getting at.
Absolutely. I mean, it's such a cliff edge, and that cliff
That's a
edge
great
can
way to put it.
be so dangerous. One day you've got your money, the next day you don't. Your bills haven't changed, your mortgage hasn't changed, your rent hasn't changed. It is far better. If you want to reduce these payments, then you could do it on a slope. I wouldn't agree with
I
that.
think some of that happens as well, but there is just a certain point in a certain set of conditions which the payments would stop.
Well, I just, what happens to that person? They're still a human being.
I don't, the thing I can't quite process, and I actually basically agree with the principle of this speech of what Rishi Sunak is saying. I have to say, I do generally agree with the point he's making, and sort of the, and in some cases, the practicalities of what he's saying as well. But I also am not totally convinced that there is vast ways of people to deciding to knock on the GP's door, pretending to have a condition that means they can't work, just to get a bit of money. And knock around the house watching daytime TV. Look, I'm not saying that number of people is zero, but I'm just not entirely convinced how high that percentage is.
There's also a good point that the politics of benefits bashing has changed quite a lot in the last 14 years. So while George Osborne could go on about, people with their curtains closed all day, and it was quite popular with the British Attitudes Survey, actually, that has moved quite a long way. And the pandemic again
I
had
was
quite a
going to
lot
say,
to
do you
do
think that was a pandemic thing?
with it. But I think we've just, I think we've bashed welfare recipients for long enough, hard enough, that people just don't see enough mileage in more bashing.
Yeah, and as I say, I think encouraging some people with mental health issues to go back to work could actually be a profoundly good thing for them. I mean that sincerely.
Really?
But, you know, I'm also not convinced. So Sunak's case was that if you take these fit notes away from the GP, that's a good thing because it stops the sort of pressure. If you're lucky enough to have a relationship with your local GP, that can pressurise the GP into signing you off because they don't want to damage that relationship. And so it's going to someone independent. I actually disagree with that bit because I think GPs, the benefit of a GP, if you're lucky enough to have a longer term relationship one, is that they do know you holistically.
I would prefer
someone like that making the decision.
And I'm quite apart from anything else, I don't want the DWP making these decisions at all.
Well, and that seems to be the direction of travel.
And that's not on.
Well, so I mean, we'll have to see.
Anyone with a personal independence payment will know that the DWP shouldn't be allowed near anything.
So we should say this comes in the context of there being a record high of 2.8 million people out of work as of February 2024, according to the BBC. That's reported by the BBC from the Office of National Statistics. Sunak said that contained a, quote, worrying proportion of younger potential workers, that, and he described the bill as spiralling. Whew, we've got through a lot, my friend. I think that will teach us to have a couple of weeks off, won't it?
Absolutely. We can't take recess off again.
No, that will teach us. Goodness knows what we'll find next week. Glad to be back on the mic with you, Emma. Where can people keep up with you?
So you can read my Substack at Hard Thinking on the Soft Left.
Wonderful.
And Twitter and all of that.
Yep. She's at @EmmaBennell_. I'm at Charlotte A. Henry across social media. Head over to theedition.net for blog posts on tech and media. You can sign up for the newsletter there, which is now fully paywalled. But if you want another way to get that behind that paywall is to head over to patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast for a mere £5 a month. You get access to the premium version of both of our newsletters, as well as premium audio content from House of Comments. And frankly, that is a blinding deal. We did quite a fun conversation up there. It's only 10 to 15 minutes long, but we're going to be doing more of those. I guess next week we'll be back to preview the local elections. So we'll see you then.